Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. And on this week's episode, we are going to be covering the World Aquatics World Cup series that have taken place over the last three weekends in Berlin, Athens, and most recently in Budapest. And joining us later on in the podcast will be a British swimmer who raced at that final leg. So Dan, first things first then, the World Cup series, it was a long course one. Bit odd. It's usually very short course strange. This time of year.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know what to make of it. I assume it's because it's the Olympic year, I suppose, and you're kind of gearing up these summers as early as possible to get them ready and be at their peak for the Olympics. Bizarre, because I don't really remember it happening at all, actually. I'm not even... Maybe it's happened before. I can't quite remember off the top of my head.
So in my research in looking into Adam Peaty's form, and that's something we're going to touch upon on this podcast, the last time they actually did it was in 2015 before the Rio Olympics. Is something that's happened before. They might have done it before Tokyo Olympics, but I think the whole COVID situation messed that whole schedule up. So the last time they did it, and that was raced in like the Middle East, it was like Doha, Dubai, whereas this time it was all in Europe. Plenty of fast times, which is like, I don't know, it's a weird thing because long course isn't race this time of year. Like, seeing a world record go in October is almost unheard of.
It is. I think that there's, because there's a bit of incentive in terms
a lot of
financial,
money.
I think there's a bit of, these guys want to be hitting fast times now to almost set themselves up for the rest of this year and maybe even next year based on some of the earnings that some swimmers have been hitting. So I think that's a big incentive for them. But I think that we should talk about Adam Peaty because he has returned.
And I think he's actually
returned relatively well. I don't know how you feel about it, but every time he swam, and this is referring to the 100 breaststroke, he's gone sub 60 every time. That's pretty good
this time of year. In the finals, he's done. So what would I say, Dan? I would say I am very impressed. So a 59 for Adam doesn't seem like anything much, but when you put it into the wider context, so to give you some background, he's obviously been out of the water for, he's been in and out for the last 2 years with injury, with mental health, having a break. He's been through that before. We know that he started his training in the Olympic year quite a while ago. It was like June he got back in the water, if not around like before, that. Slightly before, slightly after. And traditionally, Adam doesn't swim fast until summer. Like, if you look back at his time, so I said he raced in the 2015 series when they last did long course racing this time of year. And that was, in fact, the last time Adam swam a long course event in October. He went a minute. So he is bang around the same form that he was in the Rio year. And we know exactly what happened in the Rio year. He went on to win gold. So usually Adam goes down to the 58s, the 57s, the 56s in June, July. So for him to now be going 59.8 and to finish like the whole circuit with a 59.2, I've never been more confident since Ching came onto the scene that Adam could actually win gold again.
Yeah, what I liked most that he was pushing the hundreds quite hard at the beginning.
Yes.
Like, he was pushing the first 50 to the point where he was turning level with Chin, which, you know, we all know how well Chin is swimming right now. He's almost guaranteeing 57 points every single time he swims. And I like the fact that I'm going to take your confidence as well. I've said that Adam will go on and potentially win gold, and it's almost solidifying that. And I have more questions about Chin than Adam, weirdly. Because
explain.
So Chin did really well at the Worlds, obviously. He's then gone straight into the Asian Games and gone straight into this World Cup. I don't know if he's going to have a break at any sort of stage or if he's just going to try and carry on and try and keep this momentum for the next 8-9 months.
So your question is, does he need a break? Or when does that break come? Because swimmers do get tired after a long season.
That's what I'm wondering. Does he ride this wave and keep the wave going, or is he actually going to stop for, I don't know, let's say 2-3 weeks and then have another training block later on? Because eventually he's got to do Chinese trials as well. So he's got to be up for that. So I don't know. I've got more questions about that more than Adam. I'm quite confident that Adam is doing the right thing. I mean, 59.2, splitting a good solid first 50 as well. I think that's quite good. That's quite good.
I get what you're saying about Chin, but what I would say is if you're him and you've just come off the best worlds, you've earned quite a good payday, you've won the triple, Asian Games is relatively big over in China. Culturally, we're probably not aware of it enough, but it is a big deal when you see the times that are being swam out there, the fact that Siobhan Haughey was like tapering for it. I'm pretty sure he targeted it strong. And then coming off the back of that, he's now got the chance to go race Adam in an Olympic year and maybe put some doubt into his mind by carrying on that form. Why wouldn't you? Like, why would you take your break now? He's probably, after this World Cup series, he's now going to have a rest. I would have thought would make the most
you'd
sense.
You'd think so. You'd think so.
But yeah, if we go over Adam Swims then, like you said, the first 50 was very good. What I would say is skills-wise, like starts, underwaters, turns, rusty. Which makes the times maybe even more impressive. Like, we know the work that he's done in the past with super slow-mo cameras to improve his start. But when he was next to, I think I watched it in the Berlin leg, next to Nick Fink, he was going in ahead of Nick Fink and coming up about 2 meters behind off the start. So there's big things to work on, but it's not things I'm worried about, if that makes sense. So, like, it feels like the base of the season is there and better than ever.
Yeah, it's almost like you're going back in time. Do you remember when his swim speed was like almost two times quicker than everyone else, but then his turns and his start would let him down so much that they would catch up?
Yeah,
and
then he'd swim away again. What it feels like.
Kind of like that. So we're going back in time a little bit. He still needs to work on his back end. The last 50 split isn't quite where it should be, but that will happen in time. But basically he needs to go back to what he was doing before to improve the starts, the streamline, the underwater phase. It'll and just come. Get that back going again, I think.
I don't think that was in any way the aim of going out to these World Cup legs to improve his start. That's not what he was there for.
Yeah, I think it was a case of racing Chin and seeing what he is doing, I suppose, and getting a feel of being back in a pool racing. I guess that was the first time, his first big meet, let's say, that he was racing against the top in the world. So
yeah,
it's full experience, I guess, and trying to get back into the swing of things.
So kind of rounding up, PT were quietly confident now. Like, it was a good showing.
Yeah,
other Brits then to make note of, like, there wasn't a massive amount of contingents. I think the British swimming cohort are all on high altitude camps. From what I've seen, there's loads of them over in Flagstaff in Arizona. Yeah. But Jamie Ingram raced every leg. I think he was hitting like 54 points for 100 fly. Ben Proud showed up at this last one along, I think there were like seven Brits at the last leg. He went a 21.7, which this time of year, that's good.
It's good.
Like, I'm going to say for a 53, that's good. That's really good. And then Ollie Morgan kind of carrying on last year's form, would you say, with a 54.2? Like, early season speed, that's pretty good.
Well, I was going to say, early season-wise, if you're looking at all these times, yes, they're not at peak level, they're not at PB just yet, but as of right now, and of course they're not used to doing long course racing just yet, I would say these times are pretty good and pretty respectable, to be perfectly honest, especially Ben Proud. Like 20, it's almost like it's expected of him now to go sub-22 every single time. That's how good he is. So I would say that was probably the standout one, actually, 21.7.
Should we give a little bit of context then why we're saying these times are impressive? And why we're saying people don't swim well or fast in October? It's because they have just come off a summer break after World Championships, a lot of them, and have been in the water training for maximum 6 weeks, more likely four.
Something like that. Which they haven't done the hardest of sessions just yet. That's what the Christmas period is all about, the November, December, January months. They're the hard-working months. These sort of months are almost get back in the water, back into routine. That's that sort of mentality. That the sessions will be gradually getting harder, basically. So, these guys are swimming these times almost off muscle memory, kind of, if that makes sense. So So based on that, so these times are quite good, yeah.
Now, another British swimmer who raced out in Budapest was Bath's Josh Gammon. And I'm delighted to say Josh is joining us on this week's podcast. Josh, thank you for joining us on the podcast this week. How was racing out in Budapest? How was it to take part in the World Cup series?
Oh, it was absolutely awesome. It's my first one. Just to be surrounded by, the best athletes in the world. I think Budapest being the last leg was arguably the highest level out of the out of the three. So just to be surrounded by, you know, sort of the top level swimmers was just incredible.
Yeah, what is it like sharing the pool with some of those like elite international athletes at that stage?
Well, yeah, it is. It's quite mind blowing. Obviously, like, just people that you've looked up to, like Chad, like Ben Proud, like since I was a young swimmer, it's just to see them actually, you know, race in person and to be training alongside them in like the swim down warm up pool, swim down pool. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's mind blowing.
How did you get on with your own swims? How did you think you did personally?
Yeah, so definitely a lot to learn. I'm not, obviously, there's nothing to scream and shout about. I'm still relatively far away from my PBs, but you know, it's still early days. With sort of the idea why I went there was just to get a bit of experience and put myself in the mixer with, you know, the best in the world. And personally, I find there's no better way to learn than just being thrown in at that end and just see how you get on, how you deal with the pressure, like the environment. It's completely different to British nationals. You know everyone you're racing against. So just to experience racing against international athletes, different people. It was awesome.
When you say there's a lot to learn, then is it from how you like mentally prepare that you're actually racing against these guys and you're on the same level as them, you're at the same competition as them? Is it that sort of thing that you're looking to learn how to deal with better?
Yeah, for sure. And it's just obviously being in another country as well, you gotta adapt to like their culture and like what they eat. We were quite lucky out there. We were surrounded by quite a few Lidls. So as a result, we didn't have to, you know, go too far to get the stuff that we're used to eating every single day. And in terms of looking at the swimming side of things, it's just not necessarily looking how people race, but how people are before they race, what they're like. It's just interesting to see, you know, are they someone that puts in their headphones and gets in the zone, or are they a bit of a social butterfly? Do they speak to people before and after? It's just very interesting to see. And then obviously coming towards the end of the week, you just see what sort of personalities people have. It's just really interesting to see like a different side of these athletes, which is awesome.
You said that your times or your swims weren't anything to scream and shout about, but are you where you're usually at this point in the season, this early on?
So if I'm being completely honest with you, I've never raced long course this early on. My first long course competition I usually do is in February, which is Long Course Bucks. So I've never, ever done a competition, a long course competition after July until obviously the new year or February. But if I was to compare the times I was going in February last year to the times I swam now, I think use my 200 fly for example. So I swam a 202. So last year February I swam a 205.
Okay, nice.
So it's in terms of obviously how I was swimming last year. Obviously I can't compare directly because I never swam so this early on. But in terms of, you know, first long course race, it is, it's been a lot better than previous years for sure.
Was it a bit of a shock that you're racing long course this early on in the season? Because it's not really, hasn't been done before, if I remember correctly.
Not for a while.
Yeah. I'm under the impression they changed the setup to long course because of the Olympic year. That's the impression I was under. I think that someone may have told me that. It was just difficult. It was very difficult to sort of adjust. I'd been back in Bath swimming for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, obviously after having the summer off. So I'm not in the full swing of training. It was a very weird experience to be racing long course so early on with our short course season.
Yeah.
202 on 200 fly with 4 weeks training is not bad. That sounds like all the better.
There's a lot there's a lot obviously to learn from. I've got, you know, big dreams for next year, and I've got a lot of time to drop, but for now, definitely it's very positive. I can't complain, for sure.
Yeah. So if the goal of going to like Budapest was to learn to mix it with these elite guys, the international stars that hopefully in the future, say, like, well, it's not even 12 months away now, like 8 months, 9 months away, you'll be on the Olympic stage with them. How do you put this into practice? Like the lessons that we've just gone through, the lessons that you've learned of how to interact with them, how to race at a big meet like this. Is it you need to go and race internationally a bit more for the next 12 months? Is it a case of, okay, I just need to almost approach British meets a bit differently? How do you take it forward for the next season?
So in terms of like how I swim in general, I like to think that I race my own race, so it doesn't really matter who I'm racing against. You know, I've got my areas to work on. I've got these goals to hit in the pool. So in terms of like the different people I'm racing against, doesn't really change much for what I do. But in terms of obviously like the level and like the people in the cool room. Obviously you turn up to British, like you know pretty much everyone behind the block. You're all friendly, so obviously it's that getting over that aspect of things, I suppose, and obviously exposing yourself to international racing is the only way you get used to things like that. So for me, like I keep saying, it was a surreal experience, but for me to sort of obviously get used to that a bit more, then I need to expose myself to these international competitions. But in terms of attacking British differently, I definitely think what I've got going for me at the moment is quite good. My nerves are still the same. Like my expectation is still the same. I try and stay as realistic as possible for that time of the season. So in terms of that, doesn't really change too much.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that stood up for us from your meet, or should we say the build-up to your meet, was that you were having to crowdfund yourself to Budapest. How financially tough was it for a swimmer like yourself, not on funding to race at these sort of international meets?
Yeah, it is difficult. It is very difficult. Obviously, I'm a student as well. There's a lot of people within the whole of the swimming in the UK that aren't students. You know, they're still at college, or you know, they're lucky enough to be still under their parents' roof. But I made the decision. I moved away for sixth form. I went to Plymouth College. So I boarded at Plymouth for 2 years. That was the decision me and my family made to further my swimming career. At the end of the day, it was my choice. Obviously, it was a big sort of financial burden on us. We were obviously, it wasn't easy, because it never is, and I'm sure it's exactly the same for other people. And then obviously we look at it now, being a university student. Obviously, I'm a new university setup, so I'm still having to contribute, you know, swim fees, which luckily for Bath aren't that expensive. It's just a sort of one-off payment, which is brilliant. But yeah, it is difficult, but I'm sure a lot of people are going through the same thing. And it's just sort of finding ways now what I can do around it to make, you know, my life easier, whilst maximizing the amount of opportunities I have. And sort of what I could look at is obviously getting a job of some sort. Obviously with the swimming schedule, as you guys know, it's fairly difficult to get anything that sort of revolves around our schedule. It's just about being proactive. Actually, my brother set up a GoFundMe because he does a sport called Surf Lifesaving, which is quite big where I'm from. It's also really big in Australia. Lani Pallister does it, Sam Short does it, and yeah, he had quite a few opportunities to go abroad. So he set something up, raised a lot of money, and it takes the weight off of my parents' shoulder, which I personally like. Obviously, I've always been financially dependent on my parents. You know, I'm 20 years old now, but from sixth form, you know, you're 16 to 18 years old. With the school I went to, it was a private school, so you're in from 9 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Like you're training either side of that, so you've got no time to work. So I was fully dependent. But like I said, it's the decisions I've made to be where I am, to get to where I am. And obviously, my parents have supported that, which has been absolutely awesome. And it's just at the end of the day, you can say what you say about say what people say about, you know, asking for money, but if that's where I want to be and if it's where I want to go, then unfortunately it's the option that I've got to take.
Yeah, I think maybe it might surprise a few people. I've noticed, especially to me, it's kind of astonishing that a British champion, which you are, you won British champs last year in the 200 fly, isn't getting like support to go to what is a pretty good meet to actually develop yourself further. And it's not like you're old in the sport either. You're only 20 years old. Like maybe it's something that people listening to this podcast aren't quite aware of, that yeah, the big guns, the Adams of the world, are getting a lot of support, but there's a tier below which are fighting, scrapping and trying to survive in the sport.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like I said earlier, there's, you know, I can waffle on about my own experiences and how much I'm suffering and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, there's probably 10 other people exactly like me in exactly the same position. So as long as I'm swimming fast and I keep dropping time, then it's going to get to the stage where, you know, it's going to be difficult not to put me on funding. It's just and at the end of the day, I just got to make sure I keep enjoying it. As long as I'm enjoying it, you know, and the time dropping is dropping with it, you know, I'm still loving what I'm doing. The money at the end of the day isn't going to stop me from what I'm doing. Maybe, obviously, eventually after I finish uni, but you know, that's in a couple of years' time. I can reevaluate once I get there.
I think all it takes is one opportunity. I mean, if you take a look at last year's World Champs with Lauren Cox, I mean, there's a few people saying that she probably shouldn't have been selected, but now she's come away with a bronze medal. You know, all it takes is one opportunity, and she's probably come away with a massive amount of confidence that will then lead into, well, British Trials next year, obviously, and then, you know, all going well, then she's on the Paris team potentially. I think all it takes is one opportunity, and then you just got to take it when it comes your way, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree.
Now, you've spoken about at Bath. You're at Bath training there, but previously on this podcast, when we've spoken to swimmers who are training at Bath, it's part of the performance centre setup. So you're actually at the uni of Bath squad. So how does that differ from the likes of Tom Dean, Cam Brooker and that squad?
So in terms of, obviously, you look at training and stuff like that, it's not that different. Obviously, we have different sessions, we have different coaches, but we get similar pool time. So for example, I train Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday morning. I train 6 to 8 o'clock, and then they'll be in, I'm not sure what mornings they do, but they'll be in 8 till 10 o'clock. And then evening sessions, we usually all together. So we have pool time from 3:30 till 6 o'clock. We put the boom up in the middle of the pool and we get training. But in terms of, you know, coaches, obviously I'm under Andre, who obviously a lot of people know. The National Centre guys are under Dave McNulty and Jamie, who are obviously another two awesome coaches. So in terms of how different it is, it's not actually as different as some people may seem. Obviously there's no real connection. We have different gym sessions, you know, we've got separate like physios and sports masseuses. But yeah, it's just we just sort of, obviously we're not part of the same group, but you know, we see each other all the time. We're very friendly with each other, which is awesome.
So there's no crossover at all in any sort of aspect, whether it's swim or gym, none at all,
no.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Is there a part of you that wants to be part of that setup? Maybe eventually down the line or anything like that?
Yeah, so my first year, I applied a couple of times to the centre, purely because I saw, obviously, the amount of opportunities they get. Sort of as a young swimmer, you don't sort of... I was very immature in the sense that I thought that as soon as I get into there, you know, funding comes with it, this and that comes with it, but I didn't realize how many opportunities I still do get with the uni. Under, we call it like dual career, which you have to apply for, so within the university, so I am entitled to like see a physio for free, and then I get a sports massage, not two times, like once a week. So I have great facilities. We've got a great S&C coach who has conversations with the National Centre swim coach. So it's all sort of there's a big circle of people that we have available to us. Like I said, I did at the start of my first year because I did apply for the National Centre because it's, you know, or like the big National Centre, everyone sort of wants to be a part of it. But sort of the longer I've gone on, the more mature a swimmer I've become, and just sort of you realise that in the grand scheme of things, you know, you've got pool time, you've got S&C stuff that's not actually, you know, like they don't get that many more opportunities than us.
It's about you making the most of the situation that you're
yeah,
in.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So you're a 200 fly swimmer, so it's a notoriously pretty tough event to do. So what's your training looking like for the next year? What are you focusing on?
So that's a good question. So Andre is he's a very secretive coach in terms of like what the sessions are. And so we never really know what we're getting. We can kind of guess.
Okay.
So in terms of like giving you guys actual details, I wouldn't know off the top of my head. I know from obviously watching my races back that especially for my 200, I need to work on some back end speed. And Andre's aware of that, but also as much as people may think I'm a 200 swimmer, I do swim 50 and 100 as well. So I think for the 50, I'm ranked third in the country behind Ben and Ben and Jacob Peters, and then obviously we've got quite a tough field of 100 fly swimmers. So I'm probably sitting about sixth in the country there. So I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket when I'm talking about the 200 butterfly. Obviously, I want to keep focusing on that 100 as well. Obviously, 50 butterfly is not an Olympic event, so I don't have to worry about that one too much. But in terms of my training, yeah, it's a big secret.
How was your motivation leading into this summer or this season's training block then? Because we've spoken about like funding disappointment, but you didn't get selected for what was a developmental meet in the LEN under 21s. That didn't affect motivation whatsoever.
So obviously the non-selection for the under 23s, it took its toll for sure, because at the time like coaches, family, my parents are quite big into swimming. They were both past swimmers, so they know sort of they speak the swimming language, if that makes sense. So it was a big mental hit on me. And I'm quite lucky because I'm quite a naturally happy person, so I very rarely suffer from anything negative mentally. But that was a big toll. Obviously I just had to pick myself up. The next sort of 3 months after that, leading into the British summers, was a difficult 3 months. It went very quickly for me personally. I felt it went a little bit too quickly. Going into it, I didn't feel as prepared as I felt going to the April competition. But like I said, it was a huge hit. But it's just something now for this season that's just set me up to, you know, I've never been so motivated. I've never trained so hard. Obviously back in the pool in Bath for four weeks. I've never trained this hard. I've never swam so fast in sessions, even 4 weeks in. You know, it's just that it's put fire in my belly, if that makes sense. And I want it so much more than I did previously, which I didn't think was possible. But yeah, I'm very, very ready for the upcoming season for sure.
So the motivation has basically stemmed from almost proving doubters wrong, I suppose.
Yeah, no, for sure. Obviously it was a huge setback. I've got to take it on the chin. Obviously at the end of the day, everyone's got a job to do. I'm sure people have their reasons. And I'm fine with that. I've come to accept it. I have to accept it. But it's how I now deal with that. So that is no one else's problem but mine. So I just need to take that and I need to use it as motivation and just become a better person and a better swimmer.
Yeah, hopefully 12 months down the line, we're sitting here after like Paris, and we've just said, well, look at the motivation it gave you for like that season's training.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's like the driver it's done.
Yeah.
So moving forward then, for the next season, other than the obvious make the Paris team, do you have any other goals in mind for the year?
Not particularly.
Okay.
I think the 205 has opened up quite a lot. Obviously, I can't get too ahead of myself. There is me and another guy called Tom Beely, who I'm really good friends with. You know, we both trained at Plymouth Leander around about the same time. So we're really good friends. And he's an absolutely awesome swimmer. And he's an even better guy. So in terms of that, obviously I can't be getting my hopes up too high. The nomination standards are out. It's 200 flies of 154.9, which is extremely quick. But like looking at my progress from the 2022 season to the end of the 2023 season, I dropped 3 seconds. If I can drop another 3 seconds this season, you know, I'm knocking on the door of that nomination standard. And I can sit here and talk about how that's, you know, how I could do that, but I just need to put that talk into walking. I need to do it. But apart from that, no, not really. Obviously Paris is a pretty big goal. Obviously it takes up quite a lot of quite a lot of my motivation. I've sacrificed quite a lot of my studies. I've chosen to split my last university year so I can stay for an extra year, just so I can hopefully make this big jump. But apart from that, no, Paris would it takes up quite a lot.
Takes a lot of headspace. Yeah.
For sure.
If you were to achieve that dream and you got onto the British squad, what would that mean to you?
Oh, everything. Like I'm sure it's a lot of people's dreams to, you know, go to the Olympics and be a part of a British squad. And it's always been my dream. And yeah, it would be absolutely awesome. And if I don't, you know, like you guys said, I'm still 20 years old. I've still got a lot of growing to do, growing up to do as well. I'm still very immature in the world of racing. My first British champs was 2019. So I've only really been on the national stage for the last sort of 4 years. So I've got a lot of maturing to do as a swimmer. That's just very exciting for me.
I kind of think the late developer swimmers are some of the better ones, though. Just quietly. Josh, look, it's been great chatting to you on this podcast. We do usually finish with some quick fire questions, so I'm going to throw them your way. So, obvious first one, what's your favourite event in swimming?
I'd say 100 fly. I prefer swimming 100 fly.
Okay.
It's tough to say 200, idol? I think. It's tough to say 200 fly.
It's a bit too painful and it requires a bit too much effort to be enjoyable, I think, personally.
Yeah.
It's a shame you're so good at it. Who's your swimming idol?
Well, I think it's a pretty obvious one. It's got to be Phelps, hasn't it, really? It's quite a boring answer. But, I mean, who else, really? Look up to Ben Proud as well. Managed to get relatively close with him over the weekend, just to sort of see how much of an awesome guy he is, how inspiring he is. I'd say Phelps for sure.
Nice. What's your proudest moment in swimming so far?
Ooh, great question. I'd have to say when I won at April, and it's not because I won. I love looking up into the stands. My parents are very supportive, and swimming means the world to me. And they mean the world to me, obviously. They're my parents. But just to finish, obviously unexpectedly first, and the first thing I did, you can see it on the live stream, I turned around and I went like that to my parents in the crowd, and just to see them stood there jumping up and down, screaming. It just that feeling was just unmatched.
Nice, love it. What's the hardest set you've ever done in training? If you're allowed to reveal them.
Yeah. So Andre likes to do a session 60-50s. So it's not, it doesn't seem too hard, but it kind of depends on how fast you swim it. So usually it's a long course session. He used to do it a lot with Sarah Solstrom, which is very demoralizing for me because she was an incredible athlete, still is an incredible trainer. And still the times he tells us she was doing just completely blows anyone out of the water. Essentially how you do it, you start off first 20 holding a specific time, and then every 10 you descend, descend in time obviously, so you're ending up however quick you started. Obviously if you're feeling optimistic, you can start on a 30 and then 29, 28, 27. So it just, it doesn't seem very tough, but it just depends on how you swim it. And usually how I swim it, I end up on the last 10 regretting my first 20 times.
This is fly, I assume, as well, is it?
No.
I was going to say.
No, not 60-50s fly. That's why it's quite a subtly hard session. So it's nothing ridiculous like a Daniel Whiffin session or one of those crazy athletes. But it's very dependent.
Tough enough.
On how you swim it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What I would say is there is a club who listen to this, Soundwell, who they have been doing these recent hard sets every Sunday night, so I do apologize to all the swimmers if they have to give that one a try.
They'll have to give it a try, please.
And final question then, if you were to go on a road trip, there's three spaces in the car, you can take friends, family, celebrities, anyone you want, who would you take? Helps everyone listening to get to know you a little bit better away from a swimming pool.
I'm a big family man. I'm sorry to be boring to everyone, but it'll have to be probably mum, dad, and the brother. If there's an extra space, I'll take my girlfriend as well.
Nice. Nothing wrong with a family car on
this. Got to keep her happy, so I'll say that.
Well, Josh, look, best of luck for the rest of the season. I really hope we see champs go your way in the summer, and yeah, we'll be tracking your progress closely.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me, guys. It's been awesome.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. It's great to hear that you've got so much motivation as well. And if it goes 100%. Well for you, then hopefully you're on the plane to Paris. That'd be absolutely amazing. So best of luck.
Thank you very much. Fingers crossed.
So, Dan, fantastic to speak to Josh about the Budapest leg of the World Cup series. It sounds like he took a lot of lessons away from it in terms of racing international competition. And I'm really glad he spoke openly and honestly about the disappointment of not getting selected last summer, but also how it's now not sunk in, but he's using it a lot for motivation and drive for what is a big year.
Yeah, that seems to be the big driving force, and that's the thing I took away most, is that his motivation has never been higher. He hasn't trained as hard ever. The times he's sitting in training already, again, we've just spoken, we spoke about the very beginning that these guys aren't really at top shape just yet because they've only just come back after a break. Josh said he's only been back in the water for like 4 or 5 weeks, something like that. So yeah, it's great that his motivation is there, and hopefully it bodes well for him leading up to trials later on this year. Next year.
I'm looking forward to what he can do for sure. So let's finish this podcast then with rounding up the international swimmers who competed in the World Cup series. We've spoken about the Brits. We've spoken to one of the Brits who was there. There were some incredible swims being swum. I'm just going to start with Kayleigh McEwen. I'm simply going to say she's the best swimmer in the water right now. Like, around the rest of the world, you can make an argument for Leon Machard. You can make an argument for on times, maybe Popovic. You can maybe make an argument for Summer, Chin, Molly O'Callaghan. But I have never seen a dominance like Kayleigh McEwen's doing right now in backstroke. So you have all three world titles, and after this meet to have all three world records in 7 months, absurd.
It's incredible, honestly. I mean, it's not easy to win. Like last world champs, let's start there. Like, she went and won the 50, 100, and 200. That's not easy to do. I know Chin did it in the breaststroke, and that's also not easy
to
do. But
both of them were like the first time ever, weren't they?
But pretty, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, she's definitely the first female swimmer to do it on the backstroke side, the 50, 100, and 200. But then to go and swim world records, and we keep banging about this early speed and early times in October. But she,
gradually each round, so started in Berlin and then went to Athens, then went to Budapest, and it was taken tenths off every single time. And we spoke about this, I think, about ISL with Caleb Dressel, because they were racing every weekend almost. He was getting quicker and quicker and quicker. And this is what happens to Kelly McEwen. Kyle Chalmers did it for his short course, 100-meter freestyle world record as well. I didn't think she was going to go this fast. I mean, to get the 50 is one thing, because she's not a 50-meter swimmer. But then to go and get the 100, honestly, I think it's been a long time coming, but I didn't think she'd get it now. I thought she'd get it like Australian trials or something like that.
Yeah, she's had the 100 world record for a little while, but for her to drop it, that's what you mean, isn't it? For her to drop it again.
Yes. Like, yeah. It's honestly amazing. She is, for me, and I think you agree as well, that she is the best swimmer, active swimmer in the world right now. You've listed some of the names, but I think she is top just because of what she's achieved in the last 7 months. In seven months, she's hit three world records and three back
three different distances.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Yeah, we need to do a bit of a breakdown of her, but it's absolutely insane what she's done. Yeah, it is on the way.
Yeah. She was one of a number of swimmers, quite obviously, who won triple crowns. So that means she won each event at every leg, if that makes sense. So she won the 50 backstroke at Berlin, Athens, and Budapest, and she did it three times. The other swimmers who did it were Chin, who did it on the breaststrokes, Tess Schouten did it on 200 breaststroke, Erica Fairweather, I think, 400
for free,
Michael Andrew, Siobhan Hawhey, Sjostrom, Matt Saitz, loads of swimmers winning it week in, week out. To me, maybe that's the one downside of this World Cup series, that World Aquatics have they paid for swimmers to get there? We don't know that they've paid for these swimmers to appear and to sell tickets, but there maybe just wasn't quite enough competition in terms of right at the top for surprise results. Like, you could predict who was winning in Budapest
by what happened
in Berlin and Athens.
Yeah, that is part of the issue. I think you have almost one standout swimmer per event, whereas you don't have... I think breaststroke was probably the anomaly. It's only because Chin is so far ahead of the world right now, because you had Nip Fink, you had Kuminga, you did have Adam there, you did have Chin there.
So it's actually a very good field, but it was predictable in the end.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with a good field on the breaststroke front, but then if you look at all of the other strokes, that's not really like... Jorge was swimming by herself a lot of the time.
Yeah.
This is the problem.
This is a problem with swimming a long course meet in October in an Olympic year. Like, I get why they've done it, because some swimmers and there's a lot of interest in how they're doing. But maybe if World Cup Series was located after all the trials, like leading into the Olympics, or before all the trials, say February, March time, you might get a fair few more swimmers racing it.
Well, you know, like the Edinburgh International, it's a big meet in this country. That's that sort of time. If you could change that, if you want to do a long course World Cup Series, plonk it there just before your country's trials.
Really competitive fields.
And then suddenly you're dealing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think that's my only bugbear about this World Cup Series. My only one is the lack of competition beyond the ridiculously good top swims.
Should we talk about those?
Where's the
fight? Yeah, we'll talk about those top swims, because I think they're the ones that we should be talking about the most. There's quite a few.
Pull it back to positive.
I don't know where to start, to be fair, because we obviously started with Kelly McEwen. That's the one that we had to talk about first. Thomas Chacon.
Yes.
He is a backstroker, but he has just knocked out some very good freestyle times in the 100. He's hit an easy 48s now by the look of things, but he also went 47.9 in the Berlin leg. That's good. I mean, he's beating Dylan Carter and people like that. You know, these guys are actual 100 freestylers or 50 meter freestylers, and he's beating them.
He's a free, say otherwise. Yes, he's got the backstroke world record. He's a freestyler as well.
It's mental, and he got very close to that 100 backstroke world record as well. Like 200s, I think. We could have potentially seen three world records. That's incredible. So he was a good name to watch out for. Fantastic swims there. Siobhan Hawhey, we kind of mentioned her already, winning a triple crown. 52.0 in her 100 free. That is good. Very, very good. Again, I suppose kind of like
straight off the back
she's just
of
come
Asian
off.
Games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I wonder if that's what she's riding that wave, and then maybe she's going to have a break. Who knows? Any swimmers that stood out for you outside of the ones I've mentioned?
Do you know one who always... Okay, I'll go with two. So one who always performs at these World Cup series, and I get the motivation for it, is Matt Saits. He always targets it. Now, if you know much about world swimming or what goes on inside every federation, I know the South African swimmers have it pretty tough. They struggle for funding. So for him to, what I would say is target the World Cup series, which not many swimmers really do, he targets them to swim fast and collect what would be a big payday to set up the rest of his year, because he's not going to get the funding that your Adam Peaties are going to get. I quite like the logic. Like,
it makes sense.
He always seems to stand out at these meets, maybe more so than he does at the world stage. But if this is what making, if this is what's making his swimming career survive, and he's still very young, like he can keep on improving, and this is what pays for it, then that's what these meets are there for. Like, I quite like it.
I've got no negative comments to say about that. If you're making as much money as what we're hearing that these swimmers are making, then it sets you up really nicely. You know, it's worth doing, and if it happens every year, which of course it does, then you carry on doing it. And you know, you've got still got a good couple of months yet until the Olympics, or whenever their trials is, for example.
His paydays.
Still got time to,
his paydays from the past 3 weeks have set him up beyond Paris, I would say. Like, I'm going off reporting from Craig Lord's State of Swimming. So Emma McEwen, for her last 3 weeks exploit, earned something upwards of $180,000.
Yeah, or 3 weeks work.
150, 180, but like between those figures. Yeah. That's a good going.
That's high. Yeah,
that's good going. And the other swimmer, obviously, that stand out is Sarah Sjöström. Just continually dipping below the 24 mark for 53.
Yeah, it's impressive. There's,
I mean, we say McEwen's the best in the world right now. We say Ledecky's the best ever. Where does Sjöström fit into that conversation, Dan?
I don't know. We'll have to wait until they both retire and then have a proper sort of analysis over it, because at the moment they're still on top of their game, both of them, all three of them, those names. Kaylee's got more years in the game, I assume, just because she's younger. But I see Sjöström winning another Olympic gold for her 53, because I don't know if anyone's getting close at the moment. I see Casey Ledecky winning another two, because who's going to challenge her for the ace and 15? No one, I don't think. They're still collecting. They're still adding to their tally. So it's difficult to say who would be the greatest female swimmer ever at the moment, because we don't know. We don't know.
That's a conversation for another podcast.
It is, indeed.
I do think this is a good place to end our review of the World Cup series out over the past 3 weeks. It's been good following along. I've enjoyed watching swimming on YouTube. It's a nice, easy access way to watch swimming. Please carry that on, World Aquatics. And before we round up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, I do want to say, over the past months while we were on poolsides around Britain, we did a lot of coverage at the British swimming meets. We want to say a massive thank you to everyone who came over, said hi. We did say on the podcast beforehand, come over. It was great to hear all the positive feedback. We do really appreciate it, and it's a quiet motivation for us moving forward for what is going to be a very busy and big year.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I mean, we might be a little bit tired by the year end, but I think it's going to definitely be worth it, because we've got to celebrate swimming. This is the pinnacle of the sport. It will be when it's the summer comes around.
Absolutely. So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. And me and Dan will see you in 7 days' time.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.